Hi, everyone. This is the WGN Radio Theater Program 461. I'm Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. What's up?
We'll be here till 3 o'clock in the morning, five full hours of classic radio. And we will have five half-hour radio shows and a five-part Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
It's an extra bonus this week.
That's right. So in this hour, it's The Shadow with Bill Johnstone and Agnes Moorehead, plus Johnny Dollar. Hour two, it's the Jack Benny program. Hour three, Gunsmoke. Hour four, Boston Blackie. And hour five, Richard Diamond, Private Detective. And don't forget, a five-part Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar episode, one 15-minute episode each hour.
Yes, you have to listen to the whole five-hour show to finish that one.
All right, we'll start things off with The Shadow after these words. Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I are here every Saturday night from 10 p.m. until 3 o'clock in the morning playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Right now it's time for one of the most popular mystery detective shows of the golden age of radio, The Shadow. Orson Welles starred as The Shadow in 1937, then Bill Johnstone took over, then John Archer, then Brett Morrison. Of course, The Shadow knew the secret of invisibility. He could cloud your mind, Lisa. Boy, I wish I could do that.
Cloud my mind or be invisible?
Both.
Okay.
I'd like to be invisible.
I'd like you to be invisible.
If I could have a superpower, it would be to fly. And I think you said you'd want yours to be invisible.
Right.
Visibility.
I think that's the best.
Wow, yeah.
Although you could be invisible every so often. It'd be okay.
Right now, it is The Shadow. Let's go back to October 9th, 1938, with Death Stalks the Shadow, starring Bill Johnstone and Agnes Moorehead.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
Again, Blue Coal Dealers present radio's strangest adventurer, The Shadow. The curtain rises on The Shadow's thrilling adventure in just a moment. But first, may I advise all homeowners who want steadier, more dependable home heating to be sure and order Blue Coal. It's America's finest anthracite, the coal that will ensure you and your family greater heating comfort at less cost. Blue Coal is mined from Pennsylvania's richest anthracite deposit. It's carefully sized, prepared, laboratory tested, and trademarked a harmless blue as your guarantee of its superior quality. Remember, insist on Blue Coal. Order your supply from your nearest Blue Coal dealer tomorrow. The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as The Shadow. Never seen, only heard, his true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Death Stalks the Shadow.
Mallie's in the end cell, Mr. Murdoch. Just talk to him through the bars. You're the last visitor he'll see.
End cell? Right. Hello, Mallie.
Huh?
It's me, kid. Peter Murdoch.
Murdoch. Gee, I thought you'd never get here.
Come on, pull yourself together, Mallie.
Yeah, it's easy enough for you to talk. You ain't been sitting here waiting. Every day the chair getting closer.
Now, Mallie.
You're testing the current. Listen. Hear that big dynamo turnover? Coming. They're testing it for me. For me.
Shut up.
Murdoch. You see the governor?
Yeah, I saw him, yes.
Well? Well, say something.
There won't be any reprieve, kid. We're licked.
We're licked? That's funny, Murdoch. You ain't in here. You ain't gonna sit in that chair.
I didn't kill anybody, Mallie.
Why, you dirty double-crossing rat. Who planned that killing? Who promised I'd never even do time for it? You did.
Well, I didn't figure on The Shadow, Mallie.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. The Shadow. He caught me. He didn't know I was only doing your dirty work for you. I should have told him.
Yeah, but you didn't.
I trusted you. Peter Murdoch, the great lawyer. You said you'd get me off.
I can't win all my cases.
You didn't even try. Me to the wolves, so The Shadow wouldn't learn the truth about you.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
If I could get through these bars, I'd fix you, Murdoch. Anyhow, I can tell the truth about you. I'll sing so loud.
Sing your head off. My reputation is too good. Nobody will believe you.
Shadow might believe me, Murdoch. Suppose I told the Shadow who turned Dan Malley from a decent kid into a killer.
Stop dreaming, Malley. This is the death house. Tonight you're walking right through that door down there and you're not coming back.
Why, you lost.
Oh, you'd better forget all about the Shadow. So long, Malley.
Come back here! Come back here!
So long, sucker.
Malley, any news for you?
Yeah, bad news.
Gee, tough luck, kid.
Yeah, but I ain't through yet. Before they burn me, there's something I gotta do. God! Hey, God! Where's that tin cup?
What's the matter, Malley?
I want to talk to Commissioner West. I got to see him right away.
What for?
He's got to locate somebody for me. Somebody I want to talk to. Well, don't stand there. Get me Commissioner Weston!
How did you happen to choose this cafe, Lamont?
Well, Margot, this is a place Commissioner Weston showed me, and I had hopes the gaiety might stop my thinking.
What's bothering you?
Today is the 12th, Margot. Young Dan Malley goes to the chair tonight, thanks to the Shadow.
But Lamont, surely you don't regret the Shadow's having captured that murderer for the police?
No, not exactly. Malley fired the shot, all right, but I've never felt the case was completely solved. Well, let's forget that.
Oh, Lamont, look, when that waiter started for the kitchen, the door opened without his touching it.
Yes. Works by photoelectric ray.
Oh, what's that?
Look each side of the door, Margot. See those chromium fixtures sticking out of the floor? Lights hidden at the top of them?
Yes.
There's a beam of light between those two bulbs. When anyone approaches the door, his body breaks that ray. And whenever the ray is broken, the door opens without touching
it. Oh, how clever.
Yes, and convenient. But Margot, I have sometimes thought it might even prove dangerous to a certain friend of yours.
Whom do you mean?
The Shadow.
But I don't understand.
The Shadow can hide himself from the human eye, Margot. But he has a physical being. And the photoelectric beam could detect his presence.
Hush, Lamont. Here comes Commissioner Weston now.
Oh, I see. Well, good evening, Commissioner.
Oh, Branston, how are you? And you, Miss Lane?
Very well, Commissioner Weston.
Won't you join us?
Thanks, but I think not. I'm rather upset tonight.
Well, what's the matter, Commissioner?
Well, Miss Lane, have you ever heard of the Shadow?
The Shadow?
Well, yes, Margot. You've heard the absurd stories about his great deeds, huh? All poppycock, of course.
I'd give anything to contact the Shadow right this minute.
But why?
A boy named Dan Malley goes to the electric chair tonight with vital information. The only person he'll talk to is the Shadow. It's because I don't know how to find the Shadow, I'm beaten. Well, I won't find him here. So if you forgive me, I'll run along. Good night.
Good night, Commissioner Weston.
Good night. Margot, my hunch about Danny's case must be right. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
Waiter, here's money for my bill. Hey, never mind the change.
Thank you, sir.
Come, I'll go quick. I'm going to the death house now. As the Shadow.
Why doesn't he come? Why doesn't he come?
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Plenty.
I can't save you, you know. You killed a man, Malley.
Yeah, I know. But it wasn't my idea, Shadow. Honest, it wasn't.
There was no evidence against anyone else.
Yeah, don't I know it. He's too clever for that.
Who is too clever?
The bird that got me into this. The smart fellow that sold a dumb kid on crime being a good business.
His name?
Peter Murdoch.
Do you know what you're saying, Dan? Murdoch's a famous criminal lawyer. His reputation...
His rep's a blind. Listen, Pete Murdoch's the biggest crook in this section. He's got a piece of everything. Well, right now he's planning a slum fire that'll kill thousands and net him a million from insurance companies.
If you're telling the truth...
A man doesn't lie when he's only got a few minutes to live, Mr. Shadow. The job's gonna be pulled late this week.
I'll investigate it, then. If it's true, Peter Murdoch will pay for his crimes. But how can I get proof?
That's easy. Now, listen. There's a friend of mine named Dopey Jake... down by the wharves. Number 5 South Street. Jake knows enough about Murdoch's latest plan to prove what I said.
I'll see him.
Yeah, listen. If you can get to the filing cabinet in Murdoch's house, there's records and things enough to finish him.
The shadow promises justice, Dan Malley.
That's all I want.
They're coming, Dan.
Okay. I can take it. Thanks, Shadow. Thanks for coming.
Well, Dan, it's time.
Yeah. I know, Warden.
Unlock the door, Gus.
Right, Warden.
Well, here goes. Take his arms, Gus.
Steady, kid.
I ain't scared. I ain't. Not as scared as Murdoch will be. Wait till the Shadow gets him.
All right, men. Forward.
Shadow. Yeah, don't be Jake. They'll fix him.
Bye, Mally. Come on, kid. Keep your chin up.
So long, Mally.
Dan, the other prisoners are saying goodbye.
So long, boys.
We'll be seeing you, Mally.
Murdoch. Jake. The Shadow. The Shadow.
Hey. What was that about the Shadow?
The Shadow caught Dan Malley. He put him here in the big house.
Oh.
Hey, do you suppose it hurts much when they pull a switch?
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how a nice kid like that gets to be a gunman.
Yeah, ain't it?
The man responsible will answer for that, my friend.
Hey, who said that?
The Shadow.
What the...
There it goes! The juice! Ah!
Well, Murdoch, like you planned, I got the job of getting Dan Malley out of the hot spot. And he went, raving.
Yeah, Gus, they usually do.
That's right,
Joe. All right, cut it, Chick. Gus, what did Malley say when he was raving? Something about you, Murdoch.
He mentioned names?
Yeah, Bess, he was yelling something about Dopey Jake and his shadow.
The Shadow?
Seems like he'd been talking to the Shadow in the death house.
Murdoch, this means the Shadow got to Dan Malley.
All right. Beat it, Gus, I'm busy.
Okay.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, boss.
Show Gus out.
Okay. All right, come on, Gus, this way out.
Okay.
What? The Shadow?
The Shadow?
Malley Blatt.
Shut up, all of you. Gus didn't see a soul getting into Malley.
You fool. The Shadow hides from human eyes.
Yeah, that's right. He knows about Dopey Jake now. If he should get Dopey to talk...
Listen, you halfwits. We've got to beat the Shadow. Or lose the juiciest setup a gang ever had in this country. A fire that'll net us $1 million.
But, Murdoch, you can't lay hands on the Shadow.
But that's just what I'm going to do.
But the Shadow ain't real. He's kind of a spook.
No, he's real enough. He's a man, all right. He can die like any other man. Wait to see the trap I'm building.
But how can you find the Shadow?
You know, and I know where he can always be found. Where a crime has been committed.
Yeah, but there ain't any crime, Murdoch.
There's going to be one. A crime that'll set the Shadow on my trail.
Well, I won't meddle with him.
Yeah, leave me out of this, Murdoch.
And me.
Now, you listen to me, Bess. Chick, and you too, Joe. You're in this, all of you. If anyone tries to rat, I'll put you on the same spot with Dan Malley. I mean it. Well, what do you say? You're going to be good?
All right, you win. Well, what's this wonderful crime going to be, Murdoch?
A little job down on the waterfront, Chick, at number 5 South Street. I want you and Joe to go down there tonight and kill our good friend, Dopey Jake.
The Shadow's adventure continues in just a moment. But first, here's advice every homeowner will profit by following. If you'd like to be sure of maintaining steady, even warmth throughout your home this fall and winter, call your Blue Coal dealer tomorrow. Lay in a supply of Blue Coal, America's finest anthracite. Blue Coal is mined by the Glen Alden Coal Company from Pennsylvania's richest anthracite deposits. Every carload is carefully sized, prepared, and laboratory tested. Only that coal which comes up to the highest standard is trademarked a harmless blue, guaranteeing its superior quality. Blue Coal requires less attention. It saves you time and energy, and you'll welcome its steady, dependable, healthful heat that stops quick chilling off of rooms and so prevents colds and illness in your family. No on and off type fuel can possibly offer you the security and heating economy of Blue Coal. Remember, furnaces in this section of the country were designed especially to burn anthracite. And in any of the 4 popular domestic sizes, egg, pea, chestnut, or stove, you'll get America's finest anthracite when you order Blue Coal. So plan today to order your supply tomorrow. Your dealer's name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the name Blue Coal.
Let me have that flashlight, Marlowe. Ah, here we are. 5 South Street. Here's where Dopey Jake lives.
Lamont, do you hear that water?
Yes. These old empty tenements are built on piles over the river. It's the tide rushing out to sea.
This place gives me the creeps.
Here. Take my arm, Margot. We've got to go down a dark passageway to the door. And Margot, after we enter the passageway, we mustn't speak. Just go up to the door, and I'll knock.
Yes, Lamont. I'm ready.
Come.
There's no one here.
Wait.
Lamont, let's get away from here.
No, wait. Margot, the door's not locked. I'm going in.
I'm going with you. I won't be left behind. Now.
Let me get my flashlight out. There. Come on, then.
Lamont!
What is it?
Turn your light that way on the floor. There's a man lying there.
Yes. Let me get a look at him. Oh, poor old fellow.
He lies so still.
Yes. There's a knife through his heart.
Oh, no.
It's pinning a note to his breast.
A note, Lamont? What does it say?
Let me see. It says, "This is our pal, Dopey Jake. Get him to talk to you now, Shadow. Margot, this is Murdoch's challenge to the Shadow, and it must be accepted. I'm going directly to Murdoch as the Shadow."
Nearly finished with your wiring job, Steve?
Yeah, almost, Mr. Murdoch.
Gee, I hope it works.
Oh, don't you worry, Miss Bess. When I get the electric wires connected with this sliding steel door, this room of Mr. Murdoch's is going to be fixed so nobody can get in or out.
Good.
Say, I've been wondering why you want this arrangement, Mr. Murdoch. What's it for?
Well, we call it the lion's cage, Steve.
The lion's cage?
Mm-hmm.
You aren't going to put a lion in it, are you? You're kidding.
Sure, of course I am. Though we do plan to use the room soon. By the way, you haven't mentioned this job to anyone, have you?
Well, no, sir. You said not to, so... Well, I didn't.
Hey, how does this steel door work, anyway?
I'll show you, miss.
Ready?
Yeah. Now, Mr. Murdoch, if you'll have your man outside, throw the switch.
Bess, step out in the hall and tell Chick to switch on the current. He's in the room next to this.
Okay. Chick, turn on the juice.
Steve.
Yeah?
Won't that photoelectric ray be visible to anyone coming down the hall toward the door?
Oh, no, not a chance. The ray is infrared. Invisible. Look for yourself.
Yeah, you're right. You can't see the lights.
Yeah, you understand that. The ray goes from one door jamb across to the other.
And anyone crossing the threshold breaks the ray?
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
And when the ray's broken, the steel door slams shut. Watch. Mr. Best, would you mind stepping back into the room for a minute?
Sure. What happens after you... Good night, what happened?
When you came in, you broke the ray and the steel door slammed shut.
Yeah, and it locks automatically.
Say, I don't like being locked in. I'm going
on. Hey, look out!
Don't touch that
door!
What's
the matter?
Well, that door is charged with electricity, man. And if you'd touched it, you'd been electrocuted.
You see, Bess, I figure even our clever friend, the Shadow, will do the first natural thing after we trap him in here. He'll try the door to see if it's locked.
I get it. And when he does...
When he does, it's goodbye, Shadow.
You sure he'll come?
When he finds Dopey Jake, he'll be here.
Say, Mr. Murdoch,
huh? You
don't want to fool around with this door, you know. It's dangerous. I don't know who this guy Shadow is, but...
Young man, you talk too much.
Yes, doesn't he? Bess, go over to that panel in the wall. It's open. Yell at Chick in the next room to shut off the current.
Okay, ma'am.
I don't get the idea of the panel in the wall with the steel screen over it, Mr. Murdoch.
Don't worry about it.
Chick, shut her off and come in here. Chick's coming.
Good.
That door's heavy.
If you hadn't turned off the current, you couldn't have moved it.
Chick, pay off this man like we agreed.
Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Buddy, your bill's gonna be settled. You fool.
Hey. Hey, put that gun down. What are you doing?
This is the payoff, mister.
No, no, you can't. Mr. Murdoch! Mr. Murdoch!
Good hunting, Chick. You know where to hide the body.
Murdoch.
Stand by the front door, ready to open it for the Shadow.
I'm supposed to let him in?
Yes, you are, you fool. And if he speaks to you, you know what to do. Pretend to be scared and answer his questions.
Yeah, I don't have to pretend. I'm scared, all right. Nobody's ever beat the Shadow yet.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
You're sure he'll come? It's getting late.
He'll come, all right. Doesn't matter how late it is. We'll be here waiting.
Why don't you talk to him? I'm not crazy to talk.
No, I've got to get behind the glass panel in the room next to the lion's cage so I can see what's happening in there.
What's that?
It's the doorbell, you idiot. Go ahead, peek between the curtains.
There's no one out there. Nobody's touching the bell, but it's ringing.
Pull yourself together. It's the Shadow. Now, you give me a second to get away before you let him in. And remember, watch yourself.
I don't like this. I don't like it a bit, but here goes. What do you want? Who's there? Who is it? Who shut the door? Who is it?
The Shadow.
What do you want? I never...
Speak softly. Where does Peter Murdoch keep his filing cabinet? Quick, if you know what's good for you.
Down the hall in that room. In that room. That's Murdoch's private room. Go straight ahead of you.
Yes, and I won't stop until I get Murdoch.
It worked. That electric ray saw him, all right. Murdoch, we got him. We caught the Shadow.
Shut up, chicken. Come here.
Can you see him, boss?
No, but he's in the lion's cage, all right. Right in the next room. Only this panel and a steel screen between us.
Open the panel, Murdoch. Maybe we can hear him move.
All right, Bess.
Gee, not a sound.
Maybe. Maybe he ain't in there.
Oh, yes, he is. Hello, Shadow. Allow me to introduce myself. Peter Murdoch. The one man in the world who's too much for the Shadow. Come on, speak up so I'll know you're there, even if I can't see you.
Yes, Murdoch. The Shadow is here.
Getting all ready to beg for mercy?
No, Murdoch. You're doomed to disappointment. I warn you...
Warn me? You're my prisoner. You can't get away. If you don't believe me, try the door, Shadow.
No, Murdoch. I'm sure that it's locked.
Well, try it. Why don't you? Go on, you can't be sure. Try it.
You're much too anxious to have me touch that door. I don't wish to be electrocuted as young Dan Malley was.
You're smart, Shadow. But I'm smarter. Smart enough to trap and kill you.
I'm not dead yet, Murdoch.
But you will be very soon.
Then before I die, I might at least read the record of your crimes. Dan Malley said they were in this filing cabinet.
All right, go on then. Open the cabinet.
No wires lead to what I see. Yes, Murdoch. I think I shall open it. Good Lord.
You like what you found, Shadow? Don't be afraid. It's only a body, just a dead body.
Who was this man? Murdoch, answer me. Let me see. A young man in overalls. A pair of pliers in his pocket. So, he's the poor devil who wired this room for you. You killed him so as to keep the secret of this death chamber.
It is a death chamber. The death chamber of the Shadow.
Margot Lane. Margot Lane. The Shadow calling Margot Lane. Phone Commissioner Weston. Tell him to surround the house of Peter Murdoch. I'm held captive there. Hurry! Hurry!
Gee, Murdoch. This looking into an empty room gives me the jitters. You're sure he's still there?
Sure, Bess. No, wait. I'll raise the panel and speak to him. Shadow, does the time drag? Don't you admire my room?
Don't put too much hope in this room of yours, Murdoch. The Shadow has escaped from worse places than this.
You talk a lot, Shadow.
Yeah, I wish we could see him, Murdoch.
We'll see him soon enough. We'll see him dead. We'll be able to see you when you're a stiff, Shadow.
What are you planning? You can't shoot what you can't see.
No, but we can smoke him out. You ready with that gas line, Chick? Joe?
All set, boss.
Anytime you say.
This is your finish, Shadow. We're slipping a tube through this panel and feeding you a nice little smoke screen of poison gas. There, Shadow, take a deep breath of this gas. In 10 minutes, you'll be dead. Turn the valve, Chick. Give our regards to Dan O'Malley, Shadow, when you see him. How do you like it, Shadow? Makes you cough, doesn't it? But not for long.
Turn that gas panel. Don't smell any of that stuff.
Lieutenant.
All right, watch now. Watch, he'll be dead in 10 minutes. Then we'll be able to see just who the Shadow was.
He's fussing around the corpse.
How do you know, Bess? You can't see him.
No, but the body of the electrician moved.
Chick, that workman didn't have a gun.
Nah, Murdoch, I went through his pockets. Nothing left in them but a pair of pliers.
Pliers?
Yeah, he can't do much with pliers.
I wonder.
Calm down, Bess. Won't be very long.
Murdoch, look. The light in the room went out.
He unscrewed the bulb.
I don't like that.
Ah, you're all scared silly. It's only... the lights. They're out. Come on, turn off that gas.
It's all dark. The current's off.
The Shadow blew the fuse. He must have used those pliers.
That means the steel door's unlocked.
That's the steel door opening. He's out. The Shadow's out.
To the front of the house, quick. Don't let him get away.
I can't see in the dark.
Come on, everybody in the hall. Hurry. Come on, I'll run up there. Across the front door.
But, mate...
Are you fools? We can't let him slip through our fingers now after we've nearly had him.
But we can't see.
We can hear. Be quiet now. Everybody listen.
I hear something. Murdoch, it's outside the house.
Open up in there. Open up.
That isn't the Shadow.
Open. We're police officers.
The cops.
We're raiders.
Shut up, shut up. Don't let them hear you.
They can hear me, Murdoch. Smash in the door, Commissioner Weston. They're all here.
The Shadow.
Yes, Murdoch. The Shadow. Hurry, Commissioner.
All right, man. What are we going to do?
I'm getting out of here.
Come on, run for it.
I'll shoot the first one that moves.
Murdoch, we got to run. It's the cops.
Stay here and I'll bluff it out.
You stay yourself. I'm getting out.
No, no, you're not.
Murdoch shot best.
Shadow, where are you? Come on, I dare you to show yourself.
I'll take that gun, Murdoch.
You'll take... You... My arm, Shadow. Let go of me.
Now stand still.
All right. You've got my gun. You... Go ahead, shoot!
Grab those men.
Commissioner Weston, these men are criminals. Peter Murdoch, the leader, just murdered a woman lying on the floor. And there's another body down the hall, an electrician.
Peter Murdoch, eh? This is a surprise.
Well, why didn't you shoot, Shadow? I tried to kill you. Were you afraid to fight back like a man?
No, Murdoch. I saved you for the same death that you sent Dan Malley to. Death in the electric chair. You've evaded the law for the longest time, Murdoch. You had a great mind. You were a brilliant lawyer. But for wealth, you threw all that away. Piled crime upon crime. But you went too far. Now you will meet, as must all men, justice.
Before today's episode comes to an end, here's John Barclay, Blue Coal's heating expert.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good evening, everyone. Every fall and winter, thousands upon thousands of people burn up money needlessly in heating their homes. They pile on excess coal in their efforts to get satisfactory heating results and never realize that their furnace is to blame for their failure. All too often, the fault lies in the fact that the damper, draft, or grate may not be in proper working order. So this year, why not have a checkup now, at the start of the season? Make sure from the beginning that you're going to save money, not waste money. Call your Blue Coal dealer first thing in the morning. Ask him to send a trained John Barclay serviceman to your home to give your furnace a thorough inspection. And while he's there, ask him about Blue Coal's automatic heat regulator. It's a thermostat which opens and closes dampers automatically, maintains a constant temperature in your home, and does away with constant furnace attention. With a Blue Coal heat regulator installed in your home, you'll enjoy far more uniform, economical heat than even the most expensive oil burner could give you. Yet it costs but $18.95, plus a small installation charge. Find out for yourself how the Blue Coal heat regulator can more than pay for itself in time and fuel savings for you. Call your Blue Coal dealer tomorrow. I thank you.
This has been a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine, now on sale at your local newsstand. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, Blue Coal, America's finest anthracite, will again present another thrilling adventure of The Shadow. Be sure to listen, and be sure to burn Blue Coal, the solid fuel for solid comfort.
And that's The Shadow from October 9th, 1938, with Death Stalks the Shadow, starring Bill Johnstone and Agnes Moorehead. But right now it's time for part one of a five-part Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar series. Of course, Johnny Dollar was America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator. And on this five-part series called The Tears of Night Matter, Bob Bailey stars. So here's part one of a five-part adventure from May 21st, 1956. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
This is Hillary Fuchs, CPA. You left word for me to call Mr. Dollar. I don't seem to recall the name.
I'm with Universal Adjusters. They asked me to look into this Wendover claim.
Universal Insurance Adjusters?
That's right, insurance. I understand you filed a claim in Mrs. Wendover's name.
Mrs. Wendover hired me to handle her affairs a few days ago. Who do you want to talk to, me or Mrs. Wendover?
Anybody who can make me understand why Mrs. Wendover let a $50,000 policy lie around for 2 years before she filed a claim.
I'll try. I don't know whether I can convince you or not, but I'll try.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, 518 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter. Expense account item one, $92.50, airfare and incidentals, Hartford to Miami Beach, Florida. My plane got in at 11 p.m., so I went to a hotel and got some sleep. I put in a call to Hillary Fuchs, certified public accountant, as soon as I woke up. Then I had some breakfast and took a cab out to his office. It was a pleasant four-mile trip along a beautiful white-sanded oceanfront, and it cost me item two, $3 even.
Come on in here, Dollar. The air conditioner's working here.
Hillary Fuchs was a big man in his late 40s. He was semi-bald, had a good sunburn, and smelled faintly of Scotch whiskey. The office he led me into was cool and dark and elegantly furnished in bamboo knickknacks. The desk was cluttered with a stack of financial statements and legal papers.
This is quite a thing, I guess, Dollar. By the way, I didn't find any Universal Insurance Adjusters in the phone book.
We're located in Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford? You're a long way from home, Dollar. They sent you all the way to Miami Beach about this?
Yep.
Seems like a pretty expensive way to handle it.
Pretty expensive claim, $50,000.
Would it do any good to tell you it's legitimate?
Sure, but I'm hired to check it out just the same.
In other words, you don't believe me.
Well, look at it our way, Mr. Fuchs. The claim came into the office day before yesterday, and we have 72 hours to act on it.
Okay, what can I do?
First off, tell me your connection with Mrs. Wendover.
She hired me to put her business affairs in order about 10 days ago, first time I ever saw her. She said the Treasury Department had advised her to get some expert help. They were on her about back taxes, and that's it.
I see. Tell me about Noah Wendover's death.
He died 2 years ago, last April 14th. By the way, it's just coming to me. Did the insurance company know anything about him being dead until that claim came in?
Nope.
No wonder they sent you all the way from Hartford. Well, Wendover and his wife took a party of eight out on their boat for a 10-day cruise. Wendover had an attack of appendicitis at sea. There wasn't a doctor aboard. The appendix burst, and he died before they could make the nearest port.
Mm-hmm. Let me get back to the original question. Why all this time before Mrs. Wendover filed claim for benefits?
Well, you really got to know Mrs. Wendover, I guess. She's a little crazy, a little wacky, a little strange.
These are your impressions of her?
It's a consensus. I asked around after she came here the other day. The story is that she and Wendover had a pretty good thing in their marriage. They were wild about each other. They spent money like water, and they had plenty of it to spend. Then, one day, he died. Kind of threw her. Maybe it's still throwing her. I don't know.
Sure, sure.
Somewhere along the line, in the last year, Mrs. Wendover's met somebody else.
Oh?
I don't know who he is, because I wasn't paying any attention when she mentioned his name. But she's sort of coming out of it, and she's going to marry him.
Uh-huh.
So she wants to get her business affairs in order. From the look of things, nobody's done much about them since Wendover's death. You see all that stuff on the desk?
Yeah, I noticed it.
It's all hers. She brought it to me in three big hat boxes. Stocks, bonds, bills, deeds, I don't know what all. I know she's in a little trouble with the government. Not because she hasn't got the money to pay them, but just because she hasn't bothered with anything like that.
Hmm?
Anyhow, one of the first things I came across was the insurance policy thrown in there with all the rest of the stuff. And look, you see these checks?
Yeah.
Almost $90,000 dividends on some oil stock. Doesn't even bother to open her mail or cash her checks. Well, a lot of people around the country, including your insurance company, are going to be startled when I finish straightening all this out. I sent the policy claim in as a matter of course. That's my explanation for it being 2 years late.
Well, that's a pretty good explanation.
Look here. She completely forgot she loaned an $8,000 automobile to a friend in Tampa 14 months ago. I asked her about it, and she said she thought she'd left it at the filling station.
What?
And here, the boat Wendover died on, worth $60,000. She sold it to a fisherman last year for $5,000.
Yeah, I get the idea, Mr. Fuchs.
Yeah.
So you filed the insurance claim in her name along with a dozen other matters that should have been taken care of 2 years ago.
Yeah. You play golf?
No.
Well, I do, and I'm tired of looking at this pile of stuff.
Mind if I look at it?
Help yourself. All yours. I'll be at the club. Do whatever you have to. By the way, what do you have to do?
Verify this death certificate and the coroner's report.
Well, then you will honor the claim?
I'll file my report, and it's up to the insurance company to do as they see fit.
You're kind of cagey, aren't you?
That's why they pay me. Mr. Fuchs.
Yeah?
Is there some kind of bank balance in this stuff, current?
Oh, you'll find it there, but I'll tell you, in cash, Mrs. Wendover's worth about $950,000. I doubt very much if she's trying to cheat the insurance company out of $50,000.
You can't ever tell, though, can you, Mr. Fuchs?
Nope. Can't ever tell.
After he left, I got on the telephone and talked to officials about the coroner's autopsy and the death certification on Noah Wendover. They all seemed to be in order. Then I went through the papers on Fuchs' desk. They seemed to be in enough disorder to verify what he told me about Elise Wendover. I left Fuchs' office about 4:30 and went back to my hotel, carrying a picture of a woman who had existed in a state of limbo for 2 years or more, so far as responsibility and attention to business went. Johnny Dollar.
Hillary Fuchs, can you come over to my office right away?
I just left there. What's up?
Mrs. Wendover, she's having a fit. Come on over.
Expense account item 3. $3 more bucks, more cab fare back to Hillary Fuchs' office. I pulled up in front at exactly 5:30 and noticed a 1956 white Cadillac convertible parked in front. For no reason at all, I took 30 seconds to peek inside. The registration told me the car belonged to Elise Blair Wendover. She had left her purse on the seat and the keys in the ignition. A mink stole was thrown carelessly over the back of the seat. Anybody could have taken the stole, the purse, the car, the whole works. Mrs. Wendover was living up to her advance notices.
Come in, come in.
Fuchs looked pale and shaken. He fumbled around for a cigarette until I handed him one of mine. He lit it up and tried to get a grip on himself.
Mrs. Wendover's in there.
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, I had some papers for her to sign, and she dropped in a little while ago.
Uh-huh.
I told her about you. I explained to her it was certainly reasonable the insurance company would want to investigate a claim that had been delayed 25 months.
Well?
She blew up, got kind of hysterical about it, said she wanted to see you right away, that she had something to tell you. Go easy on her, will you?
Well, why do you say that?
Oh, it's just that... Well, if I'm wrong about her, I'm glad, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say she's right on the edge, just on the edge of it. Feeling better, Mrs. Wendover?
The pale girl with the coal black hair, seated stiffly in the chair in front of Hillary Fuchs' desk, was not feeling better. She could have been 16 or 36. It depended on where you were standing when you looked at her. She had a mouth that was too full, shoulders too wide for the strapless sundress, a pair of sandals, a clanking costume bracelet, and black eyes, round, big, bright, too bright.
This is Mr. Dollar, Mrs. Wendover.
I understand you're investigating my husband's death.
I'm here to verify the facts so that Eastern States can act on your claim.
Don't you believe he's dead?
Yes. Don't you?
Oh, yes. I saw him die. Yes, he's dead. How much money do you owe me?
The claim is for $50,000.
Will you pay it?
Well, I presume it will be paid from all I've seen so far. Of course, that part of it's up to the insurance company.
Of course. And they have men sitting at desks reading reports about claims all day long.
Yes.
My dad owned an insurance company once, you know. Those men sitting at their desks. Even my dad sat at a desk. I wonder something. Would one of those men sitting at one of those desks write okay on my claim for Noah's benefits if he knew about me?
Sit down, Mrs. Wendover. Maybe you'd like a drink.
You have one, Mr. Fuchs. Would they?
Well, I have to be indefinite about that, too, Mrs. Wendover. What would put a question in the mind of an adjuster if he knew about you?
I'm indolent, and I'm irresponsible. Mr. Fuchs can tell you that. I'm not quite dependable, am I, Mr. Fuchs?
Oh, we're getting straightened out, Mrs. Wendover.
And then, of course, that wouldn't make a difference. I mean, not really. A great many irresponsible, indolent, undependable people file claims. There's something else. I'm a curse.
Are you?
Oh, yes. It's a very bad thing, a curse. People around me, people I love, just seem to die.
Well, why do you think you're a curse?
Noah died, and I loved him. And Daddy, I loved him. And my brother Jim, all dead. No one can stay alive around me. I thought I should tell you that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Mrs. Wendover.
Well, then we don't have anything more to discuss. Goodbye, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Fuchs.
Oh, wait a minute.
Johnny, hey, where are you going?
I'm
going
to drive her home. You were right. She's on the edge of something. I can't quite figure it yet.
Brother was killed in Korea. Her father died of a heart attack 10 years ago.
I got that much from the papers on your desk.
Lord, where'd she ever get the idea?
Oh, I don't know. I've heard of things like this happening. I'll phone you later.
Right.
Wait a minute. I'll drive you home, Mrs. Wendover.
Oh, that'll be nice.
She smiled brightly, still too brightly, and we drove along. She didn't tell me which way to turn, what direction to go, and I didn't ask her. I liked it that way, no one saying a word. I was listening to something else anyhow, something inside of me, loud like a cannon firing twice a second. It was my heart making all the noise. Oh, it's happened a couple of times before, and it meant trouble coming up. I knew it. My heart never makes a mistake.
Mr. Dollar, do you think he'll die too?
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, right out in the broad daylight, I have a look at the tears of night. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood, written by John Dawson. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from May 21st, 1956, with the Tears of Night Matter, part one of a five-part adventure. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be back here on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, Lisa, we have news coming up in just a minute. When we come back, it's the Jack Benny program from 1951. The cast is taking a train to New York City. Plus, we'll have part two of a five-part adventure of Johnny Dollar. How's that sound? Is that okay with you?
That'll work.
Okay. And don't forget, folks, go to our website and get five free classic radio shows at 100radioshows.com. When you log on to 100radioshows.com, there are five free classic radio shows waiting for you. Just put your email address and instantly you'll get five free classic radio shows. And if you decide to buy anything at that website, what happens?
You need to use promo code radio and you will get 70% off the price.
Wow.
So that's what a deal.
Quite a deal. All right. We'll be back after the news. Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. And to my right, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
This hour, it's the Jack Benny program from 1951. Who doesn't love Jack Benny?
Right, and who wouldn't want to take a train to New York City?
That's right. Plus, we'll hear part two of the Tears of Night Matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But I want to remind everyone about Vistro.
Oh, wow.
I love Vistro.
So tell me. I know you.
I'm hooked.
You're hooked on Vistro.
Now, I mean, I'm a meat eater, okay?
I know.
I am a meat eater. How am I eating plant-based foods and loving it?
Well, you know, you took some good advice from your co-host and you gave it a shot. And guess what?
Yeah.
You're hooked.
I know.
So tell everybody what Vistro is and why it's so special.
I signed up, okay, and I got 20 meals. I've eaten like 7 or 8 of the meals already. I've loved every one of them.
So Vistro is the best vegan meal delivery service. And I was looking around researching for one that was fresh and organic and it's cooked with great ingredients. They've got chefs and it's delivered right to me frozen and it pops right into the microwave or the oven. So it's easy. There's no chopping. There's no shopping. There's no cooking. There's no cleaning. You just heat, eat, and love goes right into the microwave and that's easy.
Well, you hooked me.
Well, I'm so glad that you love it too. Vistro is convenient, healthy, and super delicious. Check it out, the website. That's vistro.com, V-E-E-S-T-R-O.com.
All right, when we come back from this commercial break, it's the Jack Benny program plus Johnny Dollar. Stick around. All right, Lisa, it is time for Jack Benny and all his gang. They take a train to New York City. Let's go back to April 1st, 1951 for the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny Program, transcribed. The program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Solaris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack Benny is in New York City, and in exactly 30 minutes, he'll be doing his television show. But let me take you back a few days to Beverly Hills, where we find Jack at home getting ready for the trip.
Oh, Rochester.
Yes, boss.
Rochester, we'll be away 12 days, so I hope you've taken care of all the little details.
As usual, I had the gas, electricity, and water turned off, and I left a note for the milkman to stop delivery.
Good. What about the evening paper?
I left instructions on that, too.
You did?
Yeah. Now, when they're through with it, the Colemans can just throw it away.
Good.
Boss, maybe you ought to stop borrowing the Colemans' paper. I got a feeling they're trying to discourage the practice.
What makes you say that?
The last two issues came wrapped around their garbage.
What?
That teabag Dick Tracy was holding last night was real.
No kidding. Now take Rochester. Take my grips out of the car while I call Miss Livingston.
Is Miss Livingston going with us?
No, but she's feeling much better and she'll be on our next show. It's Miss Livingston's sister I'm picking up.
Her sister, babe?
Yeah, she's going back to Plainfield on the same train we're taking. I'm going to call her.
Hello?
Hello, Mary?
No, this is Miss Livingston's maid.
Oh, Pauline. Oh, this is Jack Benny. I didn't recognize your voice.
Well, it has been a long time.
That's right. Not since New Year's Eve.
Oh, you've taken me out since then.
Oh, yes, that drive-in movie. What a picture, huh?
Yeah. That was the first time I ever saw a picture at that drive-in.
You were never there before?
I didn't say that.
Well, the reason I called, I'm coming by to pick up Babe in my car. Put her on the phone, will you?
Okay. It's for you, ma'am.
Thank you, Pauline. Hello? Hello?
Look, mister, get off the party line till I'm
Jack!
Come on, get off.
Jack, it's me, Babe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Babe, I just called... Babe, I just called to tell you I'll pick you up in 15 minutes.
Couldn't you make it a half hour? I'm all ready, but I have to put on my lipstick.
Well, why should that take a half hour?
Well, it's a special lipstick, and it takes longer to put on.
Oh.
But it's worth it. I've been using it for 12 years, and it doesn't smear.
Oh, is it kiss-proof?
Who knows?
Well, try and hurry. Rochester's getting the car out now.
Okay, Jack. I'll rush it. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Rochester, we'll pick up Miss Livingston's sister in about 15 minutes.
Are we going to pick up Mr. Harris, too?
No, he's going with his piano player, Charlie Bagby. I hope they're not late.
You got everything packed, Bagby?
Yeah, maestro.
Well... In less than an hour, Bagby, we'll be on that super cheap going to New York.
We've been on so many trains. Which one is a super cheap?
Well, you ought to remember the super cheap. That's the one you fell off.
No. That was a cheap.
You better wait for laughs, kid. No, Bagby, the cheap is the one they threw you off. Or was it the El Capitan?
No, the El Capitan is the one they wouldn't let me on.
Yeah.
Say, Phil, how much money are you taking along for expenses?
I don't know.
How come you don't know?
I don't know how much money I'm going to take. Alice hasn't given it to me yet.
Oh.
Look, Bagby, you know something? You ought to get married, too.
Me?
Yeah, you ought to settle down and give up your bad habits like gambling, staying out half the night and drinking.
What are you trying to do, ruin my character?
Well, it's too late for your character, but there still may be a fighting chance for your liver.
I guess so. You know, Phil, too bad Remley couldn't make the trip with us.
Yeah, I thought he'd be over that virus by now.
Well, it's his own fault. He shivered and shook for 3 days. Why didn't he call a doctor?
Well, he didn't know it was virus. He thought it was the usual thing. Well, let's see. I wonder if I got everything.
Are you taking any books along to read on the train?
Books? No, I'm off books.
Why?
Well, I just finished the one I started last January, and I was kind of disappointed in it.
What's the matter? Was it dull?
No, it was exciting enough, but it was unbelievable. Imagine a giant living in a beanstalk.
Hey, that's a book you borrowed from me. When are you going to give it back?
You'll get it back. I want to look at them pictures again. Now, come on, Bagby, let's get going, huh?
Sorry I kept you waiting, Jack.
Oh, that's all right, Babe. It gave me a chance to talk to Mary. She feels pretty good now, doesn't she?
Yeah, she'll probably be back in your show next week.
I hope so. She needs the money, you know. Well, there's the car. Oh, Babe, let me help you with your trunk, will you?
Thanks.
Gee, it's heavy. There. Now, take it easy so it won't fall off your shoulder. Easy.
Now steer me to the car.
Now watch it. Don't laugh, the trunk will fall off. A little to the left, a little to the right. Now just dump it in the back seat there. There we are. Now let's get in the car. Start the motor, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Rochester, I can't understand that motor. Maybe there's some dirt on the spark plug.
There must be. There's some beautiful flowers growing there.
Darn this spring weather. Start the motor again, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Well, there we are. Now we're on our way.
Jack, do we have to stop and pick up anyone else?
No, Phil is coming with Bagby, and Dennis is driving down with his mother.
Dennis, did you tell the cab driver where to go?
Yes, Mother, the Union Station.
Well, I hope we don't miss the train. What time is it?
It's exactly 1:15. Now it's 1:20.
That's the meter! Now, Dennis, remember what I told you. I want you to take good care of yourself while you're in New York. Watch out for pickpockets.
Oh, don't worry, Mother. I pin my money to my underwear. A little trick I learned from Mr. Benny.
Mr. Benny pins his money to his underwear?
Yeah, when he takes off his shirt, he looks like an artichoke.
I can imagine. Now, Dennis, what hotel are you going to stay at in New York?
Oh, the one Mr. Benny always takes me to, the Acme Plaza.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Dennis. You don't have to live at that dump just because Mr. Benny stays there.
Oh, I like the Acme Plaza, Mother. It's such fun. They play a wonderful game every morning.
Game?
Uh-huh. All the guests gather in the lobby and draw straws to see who's first in the bathroom. You know, Mother, I'm really excited about going to New York. This time I'm going to visit all my friends.
You have friends in New York? Who?
Well, there's Brannigan, Flanagan, Milligan, Gilligan, Duffy, McCuffy, Malacca, Mahorn, Rafferty, Lafferty, Donnelly, Connolly, Dooley...
Stop! Shut up! Now, Dennis, it's all right to... Driver, turn around and watch where you're going.
Oh, please, lady, I only turn around because I recognize your son. He's my favorite singer.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Dennis, sing for the nice man.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, driver, you come back here and listen. I'll take the wheel. Okay.
Okay, Rochester, the light changed. You can go now.
Yes, sir.
Jack, why don't you buy a new car?
I'll tell you why, babe. Because they don't make cars today like they used to.
What do you mean?
Well, for instance, take a simple matter like the steering wheel. Today they make them out of plastic. But the steering wheel on this car is made out of seasoned mahogany with solid steel spokes.
Really?
Yeah, here, take a look.
Put that back on.
For goodness sakes, Rochester, just tend to your driving.
Yes, sir.
Say, Jack, I meant to ask you, who are you having on your television show?
Gee, you read that beautifully. Do it again, babe. I want you to get used to radio. Go ahead.
Hey, Jack, I meant to ask you, who are you having on your television show?
Well, babe, I managed to get three great guest stars. I'm having Claudette Colbert, Robert Montgomery, and Basil Rathbone.
Gee, that's wonderful. How did you get them to appear with you on television?
I sent them a telegram and signed it Senator Kefauver. And you know, babe, on Thursday, I'm going to be on the radio show Suspense. Gee, I'm so tickled. A blowout.
Rochester, aren't you going to fix it?
If we stop with those silly things, we'd never get anywhere.
Rochester, you better stop the car.
Jack, I'm afraid we'll be late. Look what time it is. 2:45.
That's the meter.
Yeah. Turn it off, Rochester. It's only us. We got plenty of time. Now stop the car and we'll change the tire. Well, we finally got to the station, babe. Let's go in.
Train now leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga.
Come on, babe.
Gee, I'm ashamed to go on the train the way I look. Fixing that tire ruined my outfit.
Yes, there is a little grease on your T-shirt there.
Correction, please. The train scheduled to stop at Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga will only go to Anaheim and Azusa. Cucamonga was moved on account of the freeway.
Say, babe, you wait here in case any of the gang shows up. I'm going to get a couple of magazines.
Okay, Jack.
Let's see. What magazine should I get?
Can I help? Why, it's Mr. Binney.
Mr. Kitts. Mr. Kitzel, I didn't know you worked here.
I don't. This is my brother's magazine stand. I'm just helping him out. The poor fellow got such trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Tomorrow, his wife's relatives are coming from the east to visit him, and today he gets sick with the intentional flu.
No, Mr. Kitzel, his flu is intestinal.
It's intentional. You should see his relatives.
Well, Mr. Kitzel, I'd like to get a couple of magazines. Let's see. I'll take Collier's and Look.
Collier's and Look. Here you are.
Attention, please. Trains now leaving on track 7 and 11 for Las Vegas and all points the hard way.
Well, Mr. Kitzel...
These trains are pulled by diesel engines.
Mr. Kitzel...
Roll 'em.
Well, Mr. Kitzel, it was nice seeing you, and I hope...
Oh, pardon me, clerk, but I'm in a bit of a hurry. Could
you... Oh, John!
Oh, hello, Jack. I didn't see you.
And you didn't recognize me either, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, I must apologize, Mr. Kitzel.
Don, excuse me. I better get back to Babe.
Attention, please. Train now leaving on track 8. For Barstow, Albuquerque, Kansas City, Chicago, and Cucamonga, they really moved it.
Babe, did you see any of our gang?
No, did you?
Only Don, and he was in a hurry.
Hiya, bud. Long time no see.
Huh? Oh, hello.
Come on, babe.
Who was that?
Oh, that's that tout. He must have been here for the Santa Anita races. Oh, look, here comes Dennis and his mother. Hello, Mrs. Day.
Hello. Now, Mr. Benny, once my boy gets on that train, he's your responsibility.
I know.
And when you get to New York, I want you to take better care of Dennis than you did the last time. Don't be taking him to that place called Minsky's.
Minsky's?
Why, Jack, you didn't take Dennis to a burlesque show.
Babe, Minsky's happens to be the name of a delicatessen. Isn't that right, Dennis?
Yes, sir.
See?
Oh, Mr. Benny.
Yes?
Remember that third salami from the inn?
What? Dennis! Now, come on, kid. Let's all get on the train.
Wait a minute, Jack. I want to get some chewing gum.
Some chewing gum? I'll get it for you, babe. You wait right here. See, I mustn't forget to get my ticket validated, too. I'll do it right after I...
Bun.
Huh?
Come here a minute.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Look, fella.
Where are you going?
I'm going to buy some chewing gum.
What kind?
Spearmint.
Uh-uh.
What?
Get bubble gum.
Bubble gum? Why?
It's great in the stretch.
Well, I don't know. What about chiclets?
Chiclets haven't got a chance.
Why not?
They're boxed in.
But I like chiclets.
Now, be smart, bud, and take bubble gum. Just look at the breeding.
The breeding?
Yeah. It's by penny on a slot machine.
Oh, well, I don't care about that. I'm going to get spearmint.
Okay, it's your dough.
Gee, look what time it is. I won't have time. I'll get some gum on the train.
Hey, Jackson!
Huh? Oh, hello, Phil. I'm glad you got here in time. What's that you're carrying under your arm?
Bagby.
So soon?
Oh, he's sober. I owe him this for carrying me last night.
Oh, well, you'd better get him on the train.
Hey, Jackson, by the way, you forgot to get Bagby's ticket.
I did?
Yeah.
Well, here's mine. I'll get myself another one. I'll see you on the train.
Attention, please. Will passengers who just arrived on the train from Catalina please get in your taxis? You're dripping all over the station.
Now, let's see. Now, here's the ticket window. Oh, pardon me. Are you the ticket clerk here?
Yes. I used to be at Pasadena, but they moved me on account of the freeway.
That's very funny.
Thank you.
Attention, please. He stole that joke from me.
Now, look, clerk. Now, let's not have any trouble here. I want a ticket to New York.
Return trip?
No, one way.
Good.
Now, cut that out. I'm coming back by plane. So just do what I...
Excuse me, sir, but may I go ahead of you? I'm in a hurry.
Well... Yes, I guess so.
Well, you see, I'm just going on my vacation for 3 weeks, and I don't want to waste a minute of it. Clerk, will you give me a ticket?
Yes, sir. Where to?
Oh, I don't care. Any place is all right with me.
Well, the next train out is going to Nashville, Tennessee.
No, not there. I don't want to go back to that state again.
Why not? What happened there?
Well, I'll tell you. I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee Wall. When an old friend I happened to see.
And you introduced him to your loved one?
Yes.
And while they were waltzing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. Well, why don't you try to forget? Forget? I remember the night in the Tennessee Waltz. Now I know just how much I have lost.
Look, mister.
You keep out of it. Just what did you lose? Well, I lost my little darling the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
Well, what are you crying for? You're number one on the hit parade.
I told you to keep out of it.
I'm sorry.
Well, look, how about a ticket to Banff? Oh, yes, that'll be swell. Oh, you'll enjoy it there. It's very close to Lake Louise. Oh, no, no. I can't go there.
Why not?
Louise was the name of my little darling. Oh, the one I was dancing with to the Tennessee Waltz when an old friend I have...
Look, one chorus is enough. Now, clerk, give me my ticket, will you?
Attention, please. The following trains are now ready to depart. The Super Chief, the El Capitan, the City of Los Angeles, the Golden State Limited, and the Lark. There they go. Super Chief out in front, City of Los Angeles is second, El Capitan is third, the Lark is fourth, and Golden State Limited.
What is this?
Going into the turn, it's still Super Chief by a headlight, the Lark is second by a dining car, El Capitan is third by three compartments and a bedroom, and coming up fast is City of Los Angeles on the rail.
What is this anyway?
Coming into the Super Chief is still out in front. City of Los Angeles is second by a Pullman. And coming up in third place is the Lark with the engineer using the whip. And coming up fast on the outside is Mary's Sister Bay.
Rochester, I've got to get out on stage to do my television show in 30 seconds. Now hurry up and finish making me up.
Boss, I'm just putting a little more Maybelline on you.
Why?
Those baby blue eyes don't look good with gray lashes.
Oh, yes, yes. Good night, folks.
Be sure to hear Dennis Day in A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. The Jack Benny Show is heard by our armed forces overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Transcribed, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Jack Benny program, April 1st, 1951, Jack Benny and all his gang. All right, you ready for part two of the Tears of Night Matter now on Johnny Dollar?
Oh, two of five. Let's keep it coming.
All right, so Bob Bailey stars. Let's go back to May 22nd, 1956. Here's yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
Hillary Fuchs, Dollar. How's Mrs. Wendover?
So far, so good.
Dollar, can you talk?
Yeah, sure. She's in the other room.
Do you think she's all right? Mentally, I mean?
I think she's all right enough to get by. I think she's scared to death of something or somebody.
That business of the curse?
Yeah.
You know there isn't anything to that.
There's something to it for her. She thinks she's somehow responsible for her husband's death, for her father's death, and for her brother's death. On the way here, she mentioned, just like that, that someone else was going to die. Or words to that effect.
Who?
I don't know.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter. It had started as a routine investigation, a claim filed for $50,000 on the death of Noah Wendover, Miami Beach, Florida. The question, why the 2-year delay in making claim? The answer turned out to be interesting. Briefly, it involved a distraught woman who had neglected not only the insurance, but everything else in her life for 2 years. A woman obsessed with the idea she was a curse.
Do you like soda or water?
Soda, please. Thanks. Cheers.
Good luck. What's your name again?
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, that's right. Mr. Fuchs introduced us, didn't he? Do you think he'll be able to straighten out all my business affairs for me?
Yes, I think so, Mrs. Wendover.
Including the insurance?
Including the insurance, yes.
Well, you're worried about the claim, aren't you?
Well, I'm paid to worry about it. I'm not so worried now as when I first came to Miami Beach. I think I understand why it took all this time for the claim to be filed.
You mean you've met me and you think I'm kind of, you know, not all there or something?
Well,
I suppose Mr. Fuchs explained how badly I've managed things for the last 2 years.
He showed me how you've let your affairs go to the devil, if that's what you mean. I'm glad you finally turned it all over to him. I think he'll take care of it for you.
I behaved rather badly in Mr. Fuchs' office, didn't I?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Poor Mr. Fuchs. He was frightened, I think. I don't know what it is, really. I mean, he mentioned that you were in town investigating my claim on Noah's death. I felt I should talk to you. That's why I had him call you. I wanted to tell you about the curse.
There's no such thing, you know, Mrs. Wendover.
I know. I couldn't have been responsible for Dad's death. It was a heart attack many years ago. I was away at school in New York. And Jim, my brother being killed in Korea, I couldn't have had anything to do with that. And Noah, oh, I loved him very much. I'm not cursed, am I?
No, you certainly aren't. All of these deaths around you have been tragic, doubly so, because you seem to have been very fond of the people. But you aren't responsible in any way.
I like you. You're very nice. If you have any questions you want to ask me about Noah, I'd be glad to answer them. I really would. I'm all right now. Really, I am.
Well, when we left Mr. Fuchs' office, you talked a lot about that curse business.
Yes, I'm ashamed.
Were you still thinking of that when you spoke to me in the car?
Did I speak to you in the car?
Yes.
You know, I can't remember riding in the car at all. I've been standing here talking to you, and I've been wondering all this time how we got here.
Do you mind if I help myself?
No.
We drove over together from Hillary Fuchs' office. I drove you here.
Oh. Some things I just blank out. I've talked to a psychiatrist, you know. I mean, I've been under treatment for several months. He says I established a strong pattern when Noah died of shutting things out, of just forcing my mind to become blank. He's trying to help me get over it. What did I say in the car?
You said you were cursed and you wondered if he would die.
Oh, dear.
Who's he?
Teddy.
Teddy,
Teddy Davis. I'm going to marry him when he asks me. And I know he will. I love him very much.
Well, why do you think Teddy might die?
Because of people dying around me that I love.
He doesn't believe in the curse, does he?
Oh, no. He's something like you, in a way. Nice. He makes me laugh at it. He says it's ridiculous.
Because it is.
Somehow I feel comforted.
Now, look. You marry this fellow the minute he asks you and forget about being cursed and everything else. He'll take care of you. Well, I better go now.
Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
Thank you. I need sometimes very much to talk to someone like you. Thank you.
Jay Dollar, Oracle. Go out and marry so-and-so and live happily ever after. I like the little kiss she gave me. I like the way she squeezed my hand. I like the perfume she was wearing. I like the way the intense, hard brightness had gone out of her black eyes and she was just a nice woman being a woman. I liked all that. What I didn't like was the idea that she could be the other way, believing in the curse and believing she was somehow responsible for people dying. When I left her, I knew that part wasn't ended.
I knew it would come back.
Come on in, Dollar. I sort of stuck around wondering if you'd come back here. How is she?
She's okay now. Fuchs, I'm sending in my report on this policy tonight. I'm recommending they honor it. I've got enough verification.
Okay, that's fine. Sure appreciate your help on this, Dollar. Let me buy you dinner.
No, thanks. I'm getting the first plane back to Hartford.
Why not wait until tomorrow? You've got a reason, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Mrs. Wendover?
Oh, I've met people like her before. Don't ask me where or when, but I've seen them. And there isn't anything to a curse, but trouble seems to follow them. Big trouble. My business here is practically finished. I just want to get out and get away. Can I use your office for about an hour?
Sure. It's all yours. Dollar, I feel the same way.
I spent a half an hour typing up my report on the Wendover claim and another 10 minutes on the phone asking for an airplane back to Hartford. They said they'd call me right back, and I poured myself some of Fuchs' whiskey and sat down to stare out at the night. Lights burned up and down the white beach. People strolled up and down, looking at the water, holding hands. And I was sitting alone in Hillary Fuchs' office, waiting for a phone call and thinking about a curse.
Hi.
Hi. Who are you?
Anybody else here?
No, why?
You work kind of late.
So do you. What's on your mind?
You? Costigan wants to see you right away. I'm supposed to take you over.
Whoever Costigan is, tell him he doesn't want me.
You don't tell Sam things like that.
You know, it's been a long time since I shook in my boots when a skinny hood like you stood around acting tough. If you've got some business with Hillary Fuchs, look him up at his home.
This is Fuchs' office. You're behind his desk. You'll do. Now, come on, mister, and don't show me how loud a certified public accountant can growl. I just might swing this thing on your head. That's better. You got a hat?
No.
I know Costigan wants to talk to you, but I'd sure like to belt you on just for the practice.
I'm not Hillary Fuchs.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, you're going to break my arm!
I'd like to, just for the practice. Now then, it's Costigan. Is he the one from Chicago?
Sam's been there.
Answer. The Sam Costigan kicked out of Chicago a few years ago?
Yeah.
What does he want to see Fuchs about?
The Wendover dame.
What?
Something about the Wendover dame. I don't know what it is. He just wants to see you.
Okay, what's your name?
Frank Scanlon.
Here, you put this thing in your pocket. Pull it out again in front of me and I'll brain you. Now let's go.
Huh?
Now I want to see Sam.
Well, sure. Anything you say.
I followed Frank Scanlon out of the building to a waiting car, a black Packard with side curtains. It was a nice touch for this day and age, but it didn't make much sense. None of it did. It was illogical in the beginning, middle, and end. Most of all, I didn't make much sense. I should have been in my room packing. Instead, I was on my way to see an old-time grifter and hoodlum named Sam Costigan, because someone had mentioned the name Wendover.
You want a smoke?
I use my own.
Suit yourself, fella.
Scanlon was a thin one with sharp, narrowed eyes, too much padding in the shoulders, too much snap to the brim of his hat, too much point to the toe of his shoes. The .38 had taken away from him and handed back made a considerable bulge in the front of his coat. About 6 miles out of Miami Beach, he turned off the main highway onto a dirt road. About a mile of that, and up ahead, we saw lights. The lights became a fine old colonial mansion, every room aglow. Two or three guards were watching the entrance to the front. They all needed shaves. No one said anything.
Yeah? It's me, Philly. This here is Hillary Fuchs. Sam wants to see him.
Morning.
How are you feeling, Mr. Feely?
What kinds of punks are on nowadays?
I wouldn't get frisky with him if I was you. He's a pretty touchy fella.
It's so.
Yeah. Oh, this way. Come on.
He led me into the main foyer, where a hat-check girl with a lot of red hair stood ready for the evening's business, which hadn't begun yet. On the right, what had been the dining room of the old house was now a circular bar that could seat 25 or 30. To the left in what had been the parlor and library, I counted two crap tables, two roulette tables, and two blackjack stands. Beyond all this, on a screen porch, a five-piece combo made music. A few tables and head waiters stood around looking bored. Scanlon led me upstairs, and we stopped in front of a wide white door marked private. I thought he was going to knock. Instead, he whirled around very quickly and stuck the same old .38 about 2 inches into my ribs.
Now let's stand steady. If Feely! Eddie! He giving you trouble, Frankie?
Nah.
I
will, Buster. I'll give you plenty of trouble if you want it.
Hear how he talks to me? I'll crack him up a little for you if you like, Frankie. Nah. He got business with Sam right now. We'll take care of our business with him later on. However you say it, Frankie.
I just wanted you to remember that.
I will. The same way I remember a dirty newspaper story.
Know something? I'm looking forward to you.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, there is a curse that goes with the Wendover name. Goes wherever it is. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood, written by John Dawson. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, from May 22nd, 1956, part two of The Tears of Night Matter, starring Bob Bailey. You enjoying that, Lisa?
Oh, I'm loving it. We still have three more parts to go.
I know. These five-part Johnny Dollar stories are really cool. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.